This is Cynthia Gilmore, editor of the Nassau School Nurse. For our July 2023 issue, we are highlighting an article authored by two well-known Nassau members. Lori Combe is a Nassau past president, worked as a school nurse for 25 years in Klein Independent School District in Texas, and currently serves as a school nursing and school health consultant. Her co-author, Robin Kogan, publishes a blog as The Relentless School Nurse, as well as working as a school nurse and clinical coordinator and serving as the Nassau director for New Jersey. The title of their article is School Nurses Can Reduce Firearm Injuries and Deaths, and it is a subject with great personal impact, as both authors have family members directly impacted by firearm deaths. Welcome, Lori and Robin.
Thank you, Cindy, for this opportunity to talk about this important community health problem in our school communities. This topic's personal for me. At age 14, my grandfather accidentally killed his 7-year-old brother with his family's firearm as part of a Christmas Day street celebration. This tragedy had a lifelong impact on my grandfather and on his family through several generations.
Oh, Lori, that's a hard story to hear. Thank you for sharing. And thank you, Cindy, for inviting us to this podcast. I am also a family member of survivors and victims of two mass shootings that happened 70 years apart. This generational trauma of gun violence in my family began when my dad was only 12 years old. His entire family, his mother, father, and grandmother, were killed in a mass shooting in his Camden, New Jersey neighborhood. Ironically, that is where I am a school nurse and have been for the past 22 years. There were 13 people killed that day, three of which were my family members, in what was to be considered one of the first mass shootings in the United States. And almost 70 years later, my niece survived the Parkland shooting. So like Lori, for me, this work is personal and professional.
I am honored to have you both, and thank you for sharing those personal stories. As you state in the abstract for your article, the increasing shootings in recent years have resulted in America's students, teachers, and staff feeling vulnerable. Your article reviews data on school-located gun violence through a public health lens, as well as outlining a framework for prevention. But let's start with some of the data you provide. Robin, what are key data points important for school nurses to know as we set the stage for our conversation?
Yes, certainly. The data is very important to understand. And as always, data needs to be followed with stories. But most urgently, most shockingly, firearm injuries are now the leading cause of death in children and teens ages 1 to 19. Gun deaths have surpassed motor vehicles as the leading cause of death in children and youth in 2020. And in fact, it was Lori's shock at this revelation that drove her to approach me to co-author this article, where we hope to encourage school nurses to take action in their communities. There's many other data points, and I'll go over them briefly. For example, the likelihood of knowing a gun violence victim within any given personal network over a lifetime exceeds 88% of all of us for all racial and ethnic categories. And there have been 179 school-related shootings in 2023 alone. This includes all shootings on school campuses, whether or not school is in session. The one data point, though, that is often overlooked but equally impactful is the number of students exposed to gun violence at school. To date, more than 352,000 students have experienced gun violence at their schools since Columbine, which was in 1999. And there has been a 66% increase in firearm suicide rates in children and teens over the last 10 years. In fact, in 2022, there were almost 50,000 total deaths from gun violence, and more than half were the result of suicide. Gun deaths among U.S. kids rose 50% from 2019 to 2021. And did you know that roughly a third of U.S. homes with children have guns? In fact, an estimated 4.6 million children live in homes with unlocked and loaded guns. That's a scary statistic when you think about the fact that even young toddlers are capable of finding unlocked guns in the home, and they are strong enough to pull the trigger.
Well, I'm going to take a deep breath after hearing all that. So now that we have been reminded of the alarming data surrounding firearm injuries and deaths, we will turn to you, Lori, to discuss how school nurses can view this information through a public health lens to decrease violence and increase safety.
Cindy, I'll say that the statistics are sobering. The intent of this article is to encourage school nurses to work within their school communities to promote safe firearm storage. It's that simple. This is the one thing we can do immediately to save lives and prevent generational trauma. School nurses are healthcare partners and they're change agents. They're ideally positioned to work alongside others committed to public health solutions. The most effective approach to creating safe and supportive school environments requires a comprehensive, coordinated effort that includes school-wide, district-wide, and community-wide strategies. Utilizing the framework for 21st century school nursing practice, school nurses provide downstream, midstream, and upstream interventions. Throughout this article, we'll provide call-out boxes for each of these levels that provide resources to assist school nurses in planning those firearm safety interventions. And as a reminder, during today's podcast, keep your ears peeled for mention of those framework principles. In this article, Robin and I employed a case study approach to demonstrate interventions within each of these buckets. Our student Isabella was witness to her brother's death by firearm and is struggling to be engaged in school.
Thank you, Lori. That is a great overview, and this article truly provides a depth of information, and I love how the two of you separated it into these different approaches. So, Lori, let's delve into each of these, starting with downstream approaches. Provide an example of a school nurse, or the school nurse in your case study, partnering to provide an intervention in this category.
School nurse Henry's downstream interventions for his student Isabella include care coordination via direct nursing care, relaxation techniques, counseling, and referral to that school social worker to connect Isabella and her family with necessary resources. In addition, Henry seeks out education pertinent to Isabella's specific needs because he's never met a student before who was in this particular situation.
One of your examples for a midstream intervention begins with the school nurse seeking more data and then moves on to a plan to provide education. What midstream examples would you like to point out to our listeners from the article, Lori?
School nurse Henry's midstream intervention plan drives him to seek out surveillance data about gun violence within his immediate school community, so he has a better understanding of its impact on the students and families he serves. And armed with this data, Henry employs systems-level leadership to educate the entire school community about the local gun violence. He works with school administration to deploy universal screening for firearm injury risk and to educate community partners about the impact of gun violence within their community.
Wonderful. And lastly, your article shifts to upstream interventions, which serve to improve conditions through changes in legislation, policy, and regulations supporting the health of the entire community. Discuss this level of intervention, Lori, and how your beginning strategy in this section involves collecting more data and enlisting a multi-pronged approach.
Well, first I'll say that School Nurse Henry's upstream interventions focus on the harm reduction model of safe storage of firearms and ammunition. He successfully works with school leadership to get buy-in for his Lock It to Stop It program, designed to combine safe storage information and the dissemination of firearm locks. Henry plans to collect data on the number of Lock It to Stop It programs offered, the number of attendees at those sessions, and the number of firearm locks dispersed to community members. He plans to share this data with other school nurses at his state school nurse organization conference, with the goal of encouraging his school nurse colleagues to join him in increasing firearm safety within their school communities as well. Cindy, I think it's important to note that my co-author Robin has actually deployed the dispersal of firearm locks in her school community with great success. So this is a very doable program.
That's wonderful. And I love that example. That truly does increase the safety just right from the start. This topic of firearm injuries and death is not only alarming, as we have stated, it can be overwhelming for school leaders, school staff, and school nurses. As we conclude the podcast, I'm going to turn back to you, Robin, and where do you suggest school nurses begin to address this serious public health concern?
Yeah, thank you. That's a great question, because we know that school nurses meet the needs of students and families every day when school is in session. 180 plus days a year, we know that almost 56 million students come to school, and with them come health and safety concerns, including the impact of gun violence, either at home or at school. And just as school nurses are on the front lines of school emergencies, including school shootings, we can also be at the front lines of a preventive approach to gun violence in school and in the community, simply, because it is simple, by educating students, staff, and families about safe firearm storage. This is a public health approach to gun violence prevention, and it is well within the scope of school nursing practice. Lori and I hope that this podcast encourages school nurses to read our article and consider taking action in their own school communities. The work before school nurses is to embrace a grassroots level of community engagement through policy, education, and programming. But this is a group effort. None of us can do this work alone. And it's our intention to provide resources and support to all of our colleagues. School safety is a process with input needed from many school-based and community partners. And there's a saying in public health that says, you can't boil the ocean. But you know, if we each boil our part of the ocean, soon all of the seas will be boiling. So we can share the message of safe storage as the leaders in our schools.
Thank you again, Lori and Robin, for tackling this topic and providing this article rich in strategies and resources for school nurses. I encourage the listeners to download the article and share it widely. The article will be open access for 60 days on our journal's website. See NASN's website, nasn.org, for instructions to access the journal online. The July 2023 issue includes other articles related to this topic. First, a two-part article on the topic of youth violence, another article about grief in school-age youth, my letter from the editor titled Emergency Preparedness Reboot, and a NASN position statement on safe, supportive, and equitable schools. Our newly inducted NASN president, Dr. Kate King, presents her inaugural address in this issue, along with other NASN legislative and Every Student Counts updates. Lastly, the July issue presents a second article in our new series titled Legal Issues 101. You will not want to miss this issue of the journal. The NASN School Nurse is a benefit of membership and is published 6 times per year. Please consider authoring by sending us your innovations in practice and letting us know about emerging topics in school nursing.